Welcome to the fifth episode of Season 5 of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's Wednesday the 25th of April 2012, and in this episode we're going to talk to George Castro about Juju and OpenStack and stuff, and about the new Ubuntu release 12.04, aka the Precise Pangolin. We will of course cover...
I'll stop interrupting you.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark. The thin veneer of professionalism has been cracked already in this show. We will, of course, cover the latest news, events, bits about Ubuntu, tomorrow's technology today, and go over your feedback. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Tony. With me this week are Laura, Mark, and Alan. But...
Oh, Alan, have you changed your hair?
Well, yes, I'm not your regularly scheduled Alan. I'm the emergency replacement Alan.
Stunt Alan.
A stunt Alan. Yes. What have we done with the main Alan?
Well, what's happened here is that the main Alan has actually sent me down here on a mission.
An emissary.
On a mission, yes. I think the main part of the agenda is for me to negotiate terms for the safe release of his iPad.
That's not here.
Oh, it's not here.
No.
Oh, he'll be devastated.
Yes.
His fondle slab will have to wait wait here a bit longer.
We are in Studio F, for the first time.
I've been told that my living room is now designated Studio F, which is not a designation I'm entirely happy with. I was assuming it would be Studio C.
As the streaming has dropped out twice already, F is definitely the right designation. So what have you been up to, Alan?
So recently I've been rather busy with work, and in the in-between times of the busyness, I've been doing some testing of the next Ubuntu release, the Precise Pangolin. Specifically, I'm sort of mainly focusing on the accessibility testing, so going through the installer and using the desktop without my eyes, so eyes-free stuff.
So can you now actually install it from scratch without being able to see what's going on?
You can, yes.
Cool.
It's okay. It's a bit clunky still. Mm. It's not a nice experience, but you can certainly install Ubuntu fully eyes free. You just put the CD in, wait for the drums, hit Control S, and then it will start talking, and you can get yourself the rest of the way through.
As long as you know that you need to press Control S.
You have to have a that's the bit of knowledge you need.
Yeah.
In fact, you need. Well, it's better, you need to know what questions you're expected to answer.
Oh, yeah, obviously. But, I mean, it's better than having to guess when you need to press something.
It's a lot better than it was two releases ago when the instructions were, when you see the little icon...
Click it.
Press escape. That was kind of embarrassing. to get to the accessibility, you had to wait for the little picture of a man and a keyboard to hit space and then press some random key. So now it's wait till you hear the drums, then press Control S.
That's good.
So that's a huge improvement. Mm,
definitely.
Okay, and Mark, what about you?
Well, I realised it had been a while since I'd listened to them, so I decided to have a bit of a trawl through the old Lug Radio archives.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
It's quite good to listen to some of the shows from several years ago and laugh about how wrong they actually were.
Oh, right, about what things they said at the time.
Predictions.
Yeah, exactly. How, when if Google release a browser, it's going to be Firefox with Google branding.
Was Stuart Langridge the most wrong by any
definitely.
Chance?
Oh,
definitely.
Oh,
okay.
Although I did come across my favourite episode today, which is, I think they're interviewing someone from Ziff.org, and Abe Bradshaw describes Og Theora as being too orangey for crows. If you're not in the UK, you probably won't get that.
I'm not sure I get that.
Okay, Laura, what have you been doing?
Living in B&Bs all week, and various range of B&Bs while our bathroom's replaced, which is why we're in Studio F.
Oh, yes, that's true. Mark has a toilet.
Basically, yeah.
We don't.
And we drink too much tea.
Yes, there's too much tea to not cope without a toilet. Okay, cool.
Tony, what have you been up to?
Oh, thank you for asking. In a totally spontaneous
Moving
way.
Straight
Mark.
On, though.
A huge amount, actually, but the thing that springs to mind have been to see both halves of the 90s comedy duo Lee and Herring, but in separate gigs, about a week apart. So it was really exciting to see those two gentlemen, and got them to sign the Fist of Fun Series 1 DVD set. So if you're alive in the 90s, you might remember that. But that's all I think we need to do on the intro, so we might as well get on with the first segment.
So I believe there's a new release of Ubuntu tomorrow.
Yes.
Yes, there is.
Yes.
12.04.
An LTS, a long-term service release.
Which means it's a big deal.
And I'll be installing, and I'll be upgrading my work machine.
Oh, really? What, tomorrow?
Maybe not tomorrow. Maybe not tomorrow.
Go for it. It's good.
An LTS release means that it's supported for 5 years on the server, and this time around it's 5 years on the desktop as well, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes.
Wow.
Is it not 7 somewhere?
Yeah.
Oh, it might be.
I think there's a 7.
Ooh.
There's a 7
it's,
somewhere.
It's a heck of a long time. I think it's 7 years on the server.
Because I know they definitely aligned the two, but I didn't realise they'd extended anything further.
Okay.
So that means I won't need to upgrade my laptop for another 5 years after this week.
If your laptop lasts another 5 years, I should be very surprised.
It might have to.
So what is new and good in 12.04 then? Alan Bell.
So there's some new Unity goodness. There's a major new feature is that the HUD, or heads-up display, which is a different way of presenting application menus. It's a more searchy type of thing than a browsy menu type of thing, but your nice friendly browsy menus are still there.
Right, okay. So is this similar to the Mac operating system in any way?
How would you know?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, okay. So the idea of having the constantly present bar, is that?
The global menu, yeah, so all the menus are up in the top bar.
Yes.
The HUD is slightly different.
Okay.
So the currently active global menu, you can just hit Alt and then just start typing some letters that appear in a menu entry, like pref, and it'll bring up preferences as a suggested option.
Will it be clever, and if that particular application uses options instead of preferences, when you type pref, will it go, you mean options?
No, it doesn't do aliases. But it does have a very good fuzzy matching thing. So
cool.
You can just sort of mash the keyboard and think about the word it is that you're intending to type.
And it will find the right answer.
Just sort of throw a cat at your computer and it will pick the right menu option.
Excellent.
For quite a long time, it did actually penalise people who could type. So if you type the correct word, it didn't present that option.
Oh.
Because it thought you couldn't possibly mean that.
It removed exact matches. Ah. So you had to do cat typing only.
Right.
But I believe that is now fully fixed.
That's quite a major... It says a lot about your perceptions of your audience's ability. Only people who can't type use Ubuntu.
Yeah, so it's...
I'm quite excited about it as a feature because I've... As a programmer, I use my keyboard all day, and I'm very used to doing things in a sort of Vimish way. So everything is just mash the keyboard and magic happens, and you never really know what you've done because it's all just down to muscle memory.
How do you ever develop anything that works?
Who knows? But sometimes I don't. I'm quite excited. Once I get used to it, I think I'm going to really enjoy doing things that way. But the trouble is, at the moment, I'm using KDE on everything, so I don't have it as a feature, which does lead me to think that I might look at switching on my desktops rather than just using Unity on my laptop at the moment. But I'll have to see how I do on the laptop first, I think.
Of course, that's another thing that's happening this time. I've just checked the LTSness of this thing, and it is 5 years and not 7 years. But another thing that's happening this release is that the Kubuntu CDs are not being pressed. So the loco teams around the world will be getting Ubuntu Desktop and Ubuntu Server.
Oh, this, of course, is due to the fact that Canonical is no longer the primary funder of
Kubuntu, which is quite particularly sad news for me because I always use a Kubuntu CD on a piece of string dangling in the chicken run for the chickens to peck at. And that gets updated every 6 months. So this time the chickens are going to have to switch operating systems from Kubuntu, possibly to Ubuntu or possibly Ubuntu Server.
That's
Mark
just
doesn't
me.
Know what to say.
I was going to suggest KDE Mint.
That's it. My chickens are switching to Arch.
Right. Okay. So what else is big and interesting in 1204? Is this the first LTS that's had Unity in it?
Yes.
So
first LTS, yeah.
Yeah. So this is the first opportunity for quite a lot of people to see Unity. If they are the sort of people who only stick to LTS releases.
Yeah, so like on my work laptop, I'm forever now going and clicking in the top left corner and then trying to type what I want and then go, oh, damn, I've got to remember where it is in the menu. I never thought I'd be doing that.
So you actually prefer, now that you've got used to Unity searching, that's the way that you expect to work now?
To find an application, yeah.
Mm. Lenses are getting good now.
Are
there new lenses available?
There's a project to build 100 lenses to do different things.
Are there 100 applications for lenses?
Yeah, in terms of websites to search and different things. Yeah. So
remind me what lenses are.
So lenses are a remarkably visual thing to explain on a podcast.
Try.
You see that bit down the side of your screen.
It's a way of doing searching for things. And providing a unified interface for searching for different things. So you might have a lens that searches for applications, and you type in solitaire, and you'll find the solitaire type card games.
Mm-hmm.
You might have another lens which searches for people, and you put in somebody's name, like Alan, and you'll get a list of about 15 different Alans from different sources of people. It might be your Google contacts, it might be your VTiger CRM contacts, or another thing that has a list of people. It could be an Active Directory listing of people.
Mm-hmm.
And the lens could fire off searches to multiple different back-end data sources and then present all the results neatly.
So a lens, it's not like you pick the lens when you come to do the search. There's just one front end as such, but it might be plugged into lots of different searches.
So the home dash lens will do global searches across all of the lenses, and it might search 15 different things for what you want, and it will return fast results. If you click on the list of lenses at the bottom and select the lens you want, it will only search that type of thing, but it might do it more thoroughly. If that makes sense.
Okay.
So if you click on the people lens,
you'll
search for just people. Yes, yes, that's what they are over there.
Alan points at laptop.
Laura, explain what you're doing.
Four icons.
So that's what I was about to do. I'm on the previous version. If you click the top, the dash home button on the dash, and then it shows you the search box at the top that you can type in the name of your application. At the bottom of the dash, there's a shaded section that's got like a home icon, tools icon, is it?
That's the applications lens.
Applications lens, like a document icon,
files and
a music
lens.
Icon. And you can
music lens. So there's a video lens in...
So it filters down the lens that you're searching.
So you can click on the video lens and search for cats, and it will it will return...
Videos of cats.
Yeah, so if I search for videos of cats, it's returning me stuff from BBC iPlayer that features cats. So there's somebody who's got Beverly and Derek Hubert done a TED talk about big cats.
Okay. So if you also had a video of cats on your machine, would it search your own videos as well? Or do you not have any videos to take?
I don't know. I think so.
That's the sort of feature that is great from a usability point of view. And in fact, if you're listening at home, you can now hear one of those videos.
I've just accidentally started.
Alan Bell starts
a video about cats.
A big video about cats. It brings me nicely along to my next point, which is a bit of a privacy issue if you have all these things on your machine and perhaps you don't want them just to pop up when you type the word cat or similar into a search box.
Well, I have to say, I have got no videos about cats that I'm embarrassed about.
But perhaps use your imagination and maybe see that I'm talking about a wider issue. Is there... It's not always convenient to have your...
Like when you're doing a presentation on a projector.
Yeah, it's not always convenient to have your...
entire video collection
or image collection or music collection or splash up on a screen.
Am I sensing some worried people here?
No, it's a problem we discussed last time.
But yes, you're quite right, and there are elements in the system. There's a new feature in 1204, which is the Privacy Manager, which is an attempt to address those kind of concerns.
Okay.
So Ubuntu has got a feature in it called Zeitgeist, which tracks everything that you do for your own benefit. So things like your...
That's what they all say.
Just to keep you safe. So things like in a Office application, in the file menu, you might have recently used files. That's because something is tracking you to know what was recently used.
Right.
And in the Privacy Manager, you can turn off that tracking and remove certain elements from the tracked stuff that you've done.
So you can identify perhaps a folder that you don't want included.
Yes, you can exclude folders of images that you wouldn't want.
Okay, you're showing too much interest now.
I was just curious, really.
So if you want to search for pictures of animals and you don't want your cat images to turning up, and you just want chicken images, then you can. There is a solution to all that problem.
Good,
very sensible use case, I think.
So, other things. One question is, what version of Firefox is going to be in this LTS, and what's the plan for upgrading it or not?
It's got Firefox 11.
So will it stay at 11 for the next 5 years?
That's interesting, actually, because I thought that Firefox 10 was the long-term support release of Firefox.
Firefox is a bit of a special case, because that's going to be... that gets upgraded in Ubuntu. It doesn't stick to that.
I can't remember. I always try and remember this term on the live show and can never remember what it's called.
Exception?
So there's a three-letter acronym which was used to refer to packages which are updated throughout after the release, but I can't remember what they are.
I was going to say PITA, but that's a four-letter. Okay, so it's starting off with 11, but we'll keep going on all the higher numbers as they come out and are packaged for Ubuntu.
Yes, every 15 minutes.
Does the same apply for Chromium? I know it's not the officially supported browser of choice, but that has quite a lot of updates as well.
I don't know. Okay. And Chromium does sort of silent updates in the background. But I don't know whether
Chrome does.
Chromium. Chromium.
Because I think I get Chromium from a PPA, and that just pushes out updates whenever there is one. But I don't know if you get it from the official repository, what happens.
Interesting.
Interesting questions all around, really.
Yes. If anybody knows the answers, please feel free to get it.
Answers on a postcard.
Here we go. Aquarius in the chat room, that's Stuart Langridge, who I mentioned earlier.
Said,
yeah, the acronym is SRU, which I think is Stable Release Updates.
Yes, it's not one of them, though, is it?
Oh, it's not one of them. Okay, then. I was
Aquarius
wrong.
Aquarius says
time.
It's got Firefox 12. Well, I haven't got Firefox 12.
You've been shortchanged.
I have.
Okay, but apparently they are really just about fixing serious bugs, not about just keeping packages up to date. Okay. Presumably, most of the Firefox releases have security fixes in them from the previous releases, so they are quite serious.
Yeah.
And we've got a link to Chris Coulson's site, which tells us all about Firefox and the release schedules for Firefox. And we'll put that in the show notes.
Okay, that sounds cool. Thank you very much. Right, anything else in 1204?
I upgraded my laptop last night.
Okay. Is it working?
It's working. Yeah, okay. It worked fine. Just there's one glaring change to Unity, which I noticed, which is that the launcher, it's changed the way it behaves. So before, it would display, and then when you opened a window, it would auto-hide and not appear again until you either put your mouse to the side of the screen or pressed the home or Windows or whatever key you've got, your meta key. Now, it either always stays there or always hides. By default, it stays there. The only way I could find to change it to hide was to install an application called My Unity, which lets you customize Unity a bit. I'm not sure if there is actually an option to do that otherwise, but I don't like it. I like the way it worked before, and you can't have it work the way it worked before anymore.
Indeed not.
Is this releases buttons move from one side to the other?
It's one of those things where there was a big robust discussion. I think we're not allowed to call them flame wars anymore. There was a robust discussion about this on various mailing lists. So the previous behaviour, the sort of IntelliHide behaviour, tested badly. People liked it, including Mark Shuttleworth, because it's kind of cool.
Yeah,
but, and he just counts as one like everybody else.
Well, a lot of people who are invested in the project liked this behaviour because it was kind of clever and innovative and new and cool. It tested badly. They put it in front of real people and they confused the heck out of them.
Right.
The decision was made to turn it off by default, and because they don't want to have loads of code sitting around unmaintained, just put a line through it and it's gone.
So the thing that confused me was before I'm not sure if there was an option to change the way it behaved, and now there is an option to change the way it behaved, but the old way it behaved isn't one of those options. Just seems a bit of a strange move to make to me, especially if a lot of people who make the decisions about those sorts of things liked the way it behaved.
Yes, but there you
just
go.
My opinion. But other than that, I like it. I think is a good way to sum it up.
It's by far the best Unity so far.
Yeah,
and quickly, who can remember the name for the next release? The code name for the next release?
Quick Quack.
The Quantal Quetzal.
There we go.
The Quantal Quetzal.
Well, it's spelled the Quantal Quetzal, but according to Wikipedia. And some other people I saw shouting at a video on YouTube, it's pronounced Quetzal.
Quetzal, okay.
Which is a shame, if that's the case.
What is a Quetzal?
It's a bright green bird.
Okay, and what's a Quantal?
It means it's in one of two possible states, something that is sort of quantum-like.
So the two possible states for the next release of Ubuntu are going to be...
Well, interestingly, there was a...
Working.
There was a Dilbert cartoon on this very subject last week.
Okay.
It's either completely working or not even started yet.
Okay. Well, it's traditional for the first release after an LTS to be a bit more freeform.
Innovative,
that's the word I was looking for. Right, well, I'm sure we've all learned something from that. Let's get on with the news.
Now it's time for some news. Pharonix is once again reporting that Valve Software is working to bring the Steam gaming platform to Linux, along with native ports for games using their Source engine.
That's quite cool in that if it's going to happen, then it shows that a big, quite important player in the games industry is interested in Linux. But on the other hand, I've been able to run Steam and Source engine games for years through Wine pretty much flawlessly, so... It doesn't actually change things from my point of view. It just means that there's actually a company saying, yeah, it's a good platform to support.
It's more the principle than actual. Yeah.
I suppose it might convince people to, people who stay on Windows for games to switch.
Might encourage other games makers.
I suppose that's the other thing is if it does, if other games makers see what, then say, oh, if Valve are doing it, we can do it.
EditShare have announced that the release date of Lightworks, the professional non-linear video editing software, will be on the 28th of May, so about a month. The basic software will be available free of charge, while Lightworks Pro will be available for $60 per year.
Excellent. I might check that out.
Will you be editing your next documentary with Lightworks?
I might. You never know. To be honest, even the Pro version, and it's not... we're not have time to go into what the difference between the two versions are, but even the Pro version for $60 a year isn't prohibitively expensive.
No, not.
So what's non-linear?
It basically means in the same way that things like iMovie work, where you can just move video clips around a timeline. That's what it means by non-linear.
Timeline's quite linear, isn't it?
Yeah, like OpenShot and KDE Live.
So you've got a timeline and you move stuff around.
Yes. As opposed to linear, where you have to start at the beginning of your piece. And you can't move everything down and insert something at the beginning. In a linear editor, like splicing with razor blades and sticky tape.
So non-linear is like you get a piece of string, tie it together and rub it out.
Yes, it's quantum editing. Microsoft have announced the formation of Microsoft Open Technologies, Inc., to provide a clear way for Microsoft to engage in open standards and open source communities, while facilitating interaction between the open and proprietary areas of the company. Well done, Microsoft.
Yeah.
Gosh.
So are these sacrificial lambs being sent out into the...
Yeah, I mean,
it's very
it does...
20th century.
It could be a sort of, oh, we're not Microsoft, we're Microsoft Open Technologies, you can trust us.
We'll sponsor your conference.
More on that later. Canonical has made it clear that Ubuntu is to make the move to the smartphone with the advertisement of a job entitled Business Development Manager, brackets, Ubuntu Phone OS. Responsibilities of the post will include establishment of a commercial ecosystem around the OS, and to champion the product both inside and outside the organisation.
Ooh, smart.
To champion it inside the organisation. That sounds interesting.
Yeah. Does that mean that you're not allowed to own an iPhone or an Android phone if you work for Canonical?
Yeah. That'll go down well. But they post a lot of jobs all the time, so I think you can probably overread things into Canonical's list of huge list of jobs. Uh-huh. On the go.
And to be fair, when you champion, if you can't champion inside, you've got no chance. The source code for the original Prince of Persia game has been accidentally rediscovered by its original author and released as open source. Written in Apple II assembly language, the code's repository already has well over 2,000 watches and nearly 300 forks. The only significant change so far has been to remove the original copy protection from the code.
That's cool, though.
Yeah.
Well, that is cool.
When's that from?
That.
I'm not old enough to remember Prince of Persia.
The link says that the discs with the source code on were 23 years old, which is the same age as me.
Tony's only 21, so... Yeah.
It's lucky that he actually had something that could read the discs.
Well, yeah, there's actually... he got in touch with a guy who was a data archiving specialist, because he didn't want to just whack them into it. I think they were 5 1/4 inch floppies. He didn't want to just whack them into a drive on the risk and risk them falling apart. So the guy who did it's actually written a nice blog post about all the process he went through to make sure that they got it off safely.
Oh, cool.
And it's all up on GitHub.
Excellent. An open source graphics driver for the Qualcomm Snapdragon GPU has been announced with basic support for 2D acceleration. The driver is a result of reverse engineering work by Rob Clark of Texas Instruments, who produces competing chips in the embedded space in his spare time, one is pleased to point out.
That's interesting.
This is fascinating, because it's the driver he did in his spare time rather than the competing chips. So he works...
Let's make this clear now. Yeah,
so he works for Texas Instruments, doing ARM stuff. He could do great open source drivers for those, but presumably he's not allowed to do them. Because of the secret sauce that's in it. But he is allowed to do open source drivers for the competitors and reveal their secret sauce. they're sort of...
Surprise, he's allowed to look at them.
Well, it's all done cleanly. He can reverse engineer his competitors' stuff and release open source drivers for it as a competitive advantage for the opposition, which is a really bizarre sort of... What I would really like is for all the ARM chips to get into a competitive arms race to see who can release the best open source drivers for their competitors.
I just have visions of the arm wrestling.
As an offensive, bit of offensive corporate shenanigans.
Yeah.
Maybe that's an event we need to have at OddCamp, is ARM-based arm wrestling. Right, that's the end of the news.
And some events coming up. For people listening live, because it's happening tomorrow, there's the UK Ubuntu release party at Bar Soho from 6:30 to 11. And we won't release this episode till probably at least 9 o'clock. So if you're listening to it not live, you'll have missed it.
Well, if you're listening to it at the party, hello.
If you're listening to it at the party, get a life. Barcamp Canterbury is a two-day barcamp on innovative, fun uses of technology. We should really stop putting slashes in the middle of phrases. Innovative and fun uses of technology. Yeah. And will run this weekend on the 28th and 29th of April at the University of Kent in Canterbury, which is only an hour out of London on the high-speed train. Ooh, don't you know?
U-Cubed, this Saturday, 28th, at Mad Lab over in Manchester, Edge Street, Manchester. There are still tickets available. And if you listen back to our last show, you'll find out what it's all about.
Yes, we interviewed some people from the show. Tony,
Les Pounder,
and Les. I was getting confused. John
it wasn't
and
John,
Les.
Wasn't yeah. it?
No, John wasn't there.
And so ucube.info's got a bit more information about it, and I think you can get tickets from Eventbrite.
Cool. Tell us about Og Camp, Mark.
That's Og Camp.
The biggest and best event in the world.
I've not got a lot more information to announce other than to say that the website will be going live about this time next week. We've got, at the moment, we've just got a big splash screen with the dates.
And pictures of us.
And pictures of me biting my nails. So, yeah, we're going to go live with all the info you need about where to stay, how to book your place at the event. We're going to have an Eventbrite page for that. A bit about the schedule. As with last year, we're going to have a scheduled track and some unscheduled tracks, which are going to be bar camp style again. And it sounds like we might be having some additional rooms, which we're going to announce as we confirm what's going on there. So that's quite exciting. But yeah, more about that in the coming weeks.
Excellent. Now, the advice I would give to people after last year's experience is that the tickets tend to go quite quickly.
Yes.
So when they are released, get on Eventbrite and book them really, really, really rapidly to make sure you get your place. Excellent. And that's the end of the events.
Welcome to Tomorrow's Technology Today. I'm Douglas Austin Cambridge. Good day to all our listeners wherever you are around the British Empire. In today's look at Tomorrow's Technology Today, which we recorded yesterday, we'll be telling you about all sorts of technology you can expect tomorrow or the day after that. Please say good day to our charming hostess, Deirdre Morris-Oxford. Good day, Deirdre.
Ahoy, Douglas. And what item of tomorrow's technology have we today?
That would be the automatic translation machine. You've gone off script again, Deirdre.
And how does that work, Douglas?
I actually have no idea. I've lost my place in the script, Deirdre.
Well, I should imagine, Douglas, that one would speak into the device, whereupon it would translate the sound waves into the language of choice and speak them directly into the ears of the person to whom you are attempting to communicate.
Aha! I rather think, Deirdre, that one would speak into the device, whereupon it would translate the sound waves into the language of... Oh, you already said that. She already said that.
Yes, indeed. So, with the technology of tomorrow, the international language barrier should become a thing of yesterday.
Yes, indeed. So, with the technology of tomorrow, the international language barrier should become a thing of yesterday. Look, blast it, she's doing my lines again.
I should imagine the whole thing to be reliant on the near real-time processing of input, combining two comprehensive lexicons for the source and target languages.
Really? I mean, yes, really. So there's no need for a mix-up if you walk into a music emporium in Mexico City and ask if they sell sheet music.
Oh, grow up, Douglas.
So, in the future, there'll be no reason why the English language of the British Empire shouldn't be spoken everywhere. And we won't have to shout at Johnny Foreigner anymore.
Einige von uns können sehr wohl sprechen um die Europäer.
That's all from Tomorrow's Technology Today. Are you feeling all right, Deirdre? Toodle-pip and God save the king.
Okay, we've got George Castro on the line. Hello, George.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us. And George, you're going to talk to us about a project called Juju. Do you just want to start by explaining what Juju is and what it's for?
Sure. Juju is, according to the website, a service orchestration tool and deployment tool. Okay. But for most people, it's basically apt-get, but for the cloud, is how I like to describe it.
Right. So this is something which you would use on a sort of a cloud an operating system deployed in the cloud, or several operating systems deployed in the cloud?
Yeah, so the way it works right now is Juju has different providers. So when I say the cloud, that can either be Amazon, your own OpenStack cloud, or just bare metal, which gets provisioned by this other tool called MaaS, which is metal as a service. But the general idea being you just manage your cloud with Juju, and then the back end stuff is kind of abstracted for you.
So is Juju actually itself running in the cloud as well, or is it something which you're putting on your own servers?
Yeah, so the way it works right now is, in the kind of old school, like when I was a sysadmin way, if you wanted to deploy a website, you would apt-get install like your LAMP stack, right?
Yeah.
And that was really awesome, but the problem is that it's been a long time, and that problem has generally been solved. And these days, people are deploying what Mark likes to call hyperscale, like, you know, the Googles and the Facebooks. We're not talking about, you know, one LAMP stack. We're talking about thousands and thousands of servers. So the tool needs to adapt. So what I tell people is Juju is like apt-get, except instead of deploying on your local machine, it does to all of your servers. So when you say, you know, I need 50 instances of Memcache, it's the syntax is the same to apt-get, except installing it on your machine, it's installing it on, you know, as many machines as you want, transparently to you. So the way that works is when you type Juju deploy, it fires off an Ubuntu instance on the cloud. So this is either like on Amazon or OpenStack, or the MaaS will just turn on a server for you and start installing Ubuntu server on it, all automated for you. Then it installs a Juju agent, and then all of these agents talk to a central Juju Bootstrap node, and at that point they're kind of available for you to deploy whatever it is you want.
So it can actually deploy the whole server platform sort of as an appliance.
Right, exactly. So instead of like manually going to Amazon, figuring out what AMI you need, you know, do I need 32-bit or 62-bit? And then you install it, and then you have to install all the stuff that you want, and then you go and you manually SSH. You just say, I want WordPress, cool. And then it just does the rest.
So what can you install? You say you've got apt-get for the cloud, but can you apt-get anything in the repositories, or is it a particular set of stuff?
Right. So how that works is, you know, apt is generally kind of boring. What you really care about is the archive, right? The something like over 20,000 packages that you can install.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So the analogy of packages in Juju are called Juju charms. And what these are a collection of scripts that deploy a service for you. Right now, as of today, we have 67 charms in the official charm store. And we're growing that number every day. So the way we grow that number is people write charms for things they're interested in. Some of the charms just do a simple apt-get install this part on the remote node. The great thing about the charm store is that we've learned a lot from using Debian and Ubuntu archives, right? Like, it's really great that the archive is solid, but it can also be kind of limiting in a way. Especially as the release gets a little bit older and you find yourself, hey, I kind of need a newer version of PHP or MySQL. The great thing about the charm store is it never freezes, so people can actually continue to contribute and fix charms. So if your charm to deploy WordPress, for example, originally it was just apt-get install WordPress. Well, 2 years from now, that's not going to be really useful for anybody. It will install an old version of WordPress that probably isn't supported. So in the WordPress charm, we automatically just grab it directly from upstream and configure it. And since the charm store never freezes, people can submit fixes and updates to new things. So it's sort of like, you know, like an application store that people would expect when they use other operating systems, except we do it on the server. And we have automated testing and things like that. So it enables people to grab new stuff, you know, if they want, or they can just default to the app getting part.
So if community people are able to submit changes and things to the charm store,
how can you be sure that they're not putting in something that represents a huge security hole or you know, has other problems? What sort of quality control could you do?
Right. So each of the charms, when they're submitted to the store, goes through a peer review. And this is something that we've learned from, you know, managing packages as well. So you get at least two reviews from someone in the community. Over half of our charm authors right now are community members. And basically, they check over your charm. We have a charm store policy that does things like, you know, make sure when you're getting the upstream version of something that you check the hash. We have, like, best practices that we've learned from years and years of packaging.
Mm-hmm.
So they're community review, just like anything else we do in Ubuntu. And then they're put in the store. When a charm is officially blessed and put in the store, at that point, us, the charmers community, kind of takes ownership of, you know, we reasonably expect that this charm will be maintained and up to date. However, there's nothing, just like services like Launchpad and GitHub, you have your own personal namespace in the charm store as well. So you can put, you know, Squiggly George, My Crazy MySQL Charm, you probably don't want to deploy this in there as well. But by default, when you say Juju deploy MySQL, you're going to be getting the supported MySQL from us.
So the charms could be at different granularities, so say WordPress, or someone could do, someone could do MySQL, but someone could do PHP MySQL as a charm at a different level of granularity.
Right, so actually PHP MyAdmin is already a charm.
Okay.
So that's one of the first earlier ones that was submitted. But yeah, we kind of go to the service level, so we wouldn't have two WordPress charms. The WordPress charm would just have different configuration options.
Okay.
So you could say WordPress boring configuration, you know, WordPress really awesome configuration with Nginx that's meant to scale.
Hmm.
But you would have those in the same charm because we figured it would be better to add flags to charms than to have separate charms because then people would get confused.
Yeah, and you can have one charm pull in another charm, sort of?
So how that works are called relationships. So what you do when you actually use the tool, the first command you type is juju bootstrap, and that fires off the bootstrap node somewhere. Then you do, let's say you want WordPress, you say juju deploy WordPress, and you know WordPress needs MySQL, so you say juju deploy MySQL. Then the important bit is you say juju add relation WordPress MySQL. And what that command basically does is say, WordPress, you should be talking to MySQL. MySQL, you should be talking to WordPress. You guys should be buddies. And then everything that normally you would be doing by hand happens. Hooks fire off. And the way that works, it looks like magic when you're using it. But the reason that works is the charms let you, we say, encapsulate expertise. But what, you know, in English, what that really means is a guy who's deployed WordPress talking to MySQL has taken all that information and made it a script so that you don't have to manually go in and add MySQL tables. You don't have to do any of the administrative kind of setup that you did. We know that what WordPress needs to be configured to MySQL, so we basically script it. And then by putting that in the store, we basically say, you know, anybody who has any expertise and is sick of deploying the same thing over and over again and then going back in and configuring it, why don't we just make that part of the OS? So part of my job has been convincing a lot of these really, really smart sysadministrators that, you know, you probably have a script for this anyway. Wouldn't it be great if we just had these all in a store that's peer-reviewed and shared by the community?
Have you found any resistance to that with people not wanting to put themselves out of a job?
No, not yet. I think I don't think we're really to that point yet. I think because we really haven't shipped until 12.04. We shipped in 11.10, but most DevOps people and most system administrators I know, they don't even wait for the LTS. They wait for the LTS and then a point release, right? And that's totally fine. But, I suspect if you know, for maybe some of the lower-end people. Well, you've always heard the term, you know, don't get me mad or I might replace you with a small shell script.
Yes, yeah. that's like more or less totally what I was thinking of.
This is actually, yeah, pretty possible.
Cool.
But I think the benefits definitely outweigh anything. For example, when I do my demos, I can set up a 15-node Hadoop cluster in probably 5 or 6 commands. And if you look at the Hadoop book, the whole first half of that book is installing and configuring it. And for me, you know, I can already start just using Hadoop instead of messing around with manually configuring it and editing XML files by hand. And that's a really powerful thing to be able to put software like Hadoop in a realm of someone like me who might have not had the system administration experience to get it up and running. So I think that's really powerful to be able to do that.
Cool.
And then for businesses to replicate that on their own servers internally on OpenStack, I think that's going to be pretty huge for a lot of people.
I'm glad you mentioned OpenStack because, there's been quite a lot of activity, especially around Canonical, about OpenStack. So do you just want to tell us a bit about what's going on with OpenStack at the moment?
Yeah, so OpenStack we're shipping in 12.04. This will be the S6 release. We announced some things last week at the OpenStack Summit. The first is our automated installation of OpenStack is pretty great. Mark did a live demo of us doing this on HP microservers, and we went from bare metal to fully up and running OpenStack in about 11 minutes, which is really great because 6 months ago that took us 3 hours. The second thing is that Canonical's committed to backporting the next 4 OpenStack releases to 12.04. One of the things the OpenStack community was pretty clear about was, you know, it sucks having to upgrade my entire OS and OpenStack every 6 months. I kind of just want the OpenStack bits. So we'll be going ahead and backporting all the future, the next 4 releases until the next LTS to 12.04. So that means people can have really up-to-date OpenStack without the OS moving from underneath them, which we think will be really great. And we're doing a lot of automated testing on OpenStack right now. During the entire 12.04 release, every Friday, Chuck put in a snapshot of the latest OpenStack in 12.04, and we run Jenkins on it and all sorts of magic. So we're really keen on making 12.04 the way to deploy OpenStack. And then after you get it up and running, with a tool like Juju, you just connect it to OpenStack, and you can just start deploying right away. Because it's like some people say, hey, you know, it's I can install OpenStack like really quickly. Well, that's really great. Now I have a bunch of machines. How am I going to manage this all?
Mm-hmm.
And Juju's, I consider Juju like a perfect fit for that. You can just say, okay, let me look at the term store. What do I want to play with today? And then just start pushing it out quickly.
So if people are wanting to find out more about Juju, about Charms, or about OpenStack and Ubuntu's involvement with it, what sort of help are you after? Where can they find out more?
Sure. So most of the news I put on cloud.ubuntu.com, and juju.ubuntu.com is the place if you want to look at Juju. If you're interested in server stuff, #ubuntu-server on Freenode is kind of where we consolidate all that stuff. If you're doing bare metal, want to help testing, it's really hard to get testers because most testers we need to have a bunch of machines. So if your sysadmin have a development environment and have machines sitting idle, we'd love to have you bang on it and make sure that we're solid. That would really help us out.
So how many machines do you need to get started?
For OpenStack, I think it's 6, the equivalent of 6-ish.
Right.
Yeah, it's OpenStack isn't something you would run in your bedroom, even though I've tried.
I suppose the trouble is finding people with 6 machines that they don't need to be up all the time and are willing to be able to test on them.
Yeah, exactly. But but for that, you have the public cloud as well. If you want to not own any hardware, with Juju, it's really the same commands backwards and forwards. So.
Cool. Right. Well, we're going to have to wrap it up there because we're running out of time, but thanks very much for coming on the show.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
It's great to speak to you, George, as always. We'll speak to you soon.
All right.
Okay.
Bye.
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 And now we have the bit about Ubuntu, or the ecosphere, or...
Gerald.
Yes.
That's so last season.
Retro.
It is rather retro, but let's crack on with it, really. So Matthew Paul Thomas has announced a set of refinements that are planned for the desktop indicator menus in 12.10, the quirky...
Quantal.
Quetzal. Quantal Quetzal, to improve their relevance to the current user's requirements.
Okay, so how does that work?
I think the idea is that it only displays items on the menu that actually were relevant to the way the currently logged in user uses the system, rather than displaying everything there.
The indicators were there to cut down the sort of proliferation of icons and stuff in the system tray.
Yes, by replacing them with other icons.
So now we've got indicator proliferation, and this is there to address the indicator proliferation and proliferation of stuff in the indicators.
Okay, and there's a blog post with some wireframes of what it could look like, so we'll link to that in the show notes.
Canonical has announced Awesome, spelt AWSOME, a cloud proxy to enable deployment of systems across a combination of Amazon and OpenStack cloud platforms.
Good. And how does that benefit us, Mark?
Well, I suppose that if your data center goes down, but it's also partly deployed across Amazon's data centers, then the bit that's on Amazon's platform keeps going.
Okay. Or vice versa,
I guess. Or vice versa, yes.
So you could have your own cloud, and then if it goes down, you can fail over to Amazon.
Yeah.
It stands for any web service over me.
Okay. Right.
Which is a pretty contrived acronym.
Especially if it didn't quite work.
Yeah, they find an E in there somewhere.
E in web, yeah.
They could have used...
Could have had a lowercase e.
Yes.
But if this is
the last E is lowercase, in fact. But
it is.
It should be. Anyway.
Awesome.
Any web service running on Windows ME.
So, following discussions at last November's UDS, the question of making the 64-bit the default desktop architecture of Ubuntu is being presented to the Ubuntu DevEl mailing list. If ratified, all default download links, pressed CDs, and USB sticks provided by Canonical will contain the 64-bit edition of the OS.
Well, there's been an answer from the Ubuntu store about that sort of question: is it going to be 64 or 32? And they said, it's 32. I don't think there was any reference to the discussion on the Ubuntu DevEl mailing list. And I think also the Ubuntu DevEl mailing list, somebody came up with some actual data on the number of 32-bit installs that are out there, and there's rather a lot. So I think it's staying 32.
But is that perhaps because the default is 32-bit?
They looked at data from bug reports that contains CPU info.
Oh, I see. So installs which are on a 32-bit-only system.
Yeah, so it's from CPU info and looking at the LM flag, and there's kind of a lot of CPUs out there running Ubuntu that don't have the LM flag and can't run 64.
To be fair, I'm holding one in my hand.
Me too. So when you buy a new laptop now, are they pretty much always good enough for 64-bit?
Unless it's an ARM. Well, case it's a different platform altogether. But yes, basically,
But you don't know that.
You would struggle to buy a 32-bit Intel architecture computer of any sort right now.
Yes.
Okay.
Possibly a sort of low-power set-top behind thing, but really that would be running on some strange Chinese clone, probably a Vigilant, Fast 486 or something.
The Vigilant MPC, I believe.
That sort of thing.
It's 386 only. I don't even think the Vigilant MPC is 686. I think it is
586, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's that old. Canonical has announced that 1204 LTS will be certified and supported for use on HP ProLiant servers from the release date, which is tomorrow. So HP ProLiant servers, you can run Ubuntu on them and get support.
Cool.
That's excellent. Good. Because HP ProLiant servers are very good.
Well, we've talked a lot about the ProLiant microserver on the show before.
We have, yes.
I have one upstairs, in fact.
Excellent. Is that running Ubuntu?
Yes, it is.
Wow. I think we ought to get support for it now.
Just what I needed?
Yes.
No, maybe not. But yes, it's good news.
It is always good news to have hardware supported, particularly on LTS releases.
And the last bit in our bit about Ubuntu is something we've mentioned already. And it could have been reordered and I'd have known how to pronounce it at the start of the video. But this item is that the Ubuntu 12.10 is the Quantel Quetzal. And we'll have a link to the blog article that Mark Shuttleworth put out announcing the name of the release.
Riddled, yes, with Q puns as ever.
Yes.
And P puns.
They're always worth a read, and he does actually explain a little bit about why that particular name has been chosen. Although I still think it's mostly spurious. But there we go. And in the Not About Ubuntu this week, Stefano Zaccaroli has been re-elected as the Debian project leader. So congratulations to him. He starts his term using Debian's highly convoluted voting system, which has a series of runoffs, and I think the person with the biggest beard wins.
well done, Stefano.
Yes, congratulations. And that's the end of the Bit About and Not About Ubuntu this week.
And now it's time for your feedback. And John from the Ubuntu manual team emailed to say,
"We're planning the new edition of the manual and we're searching for new authors and editors to work on it. The manual's called Getting Started with Ubuntu 12.04, and if you're interested, have a look at ubuntu-manual.org/jobs.
Excellent. And that Ubuntu manual, just to remind us, is an unofficial manual describing how to use the Ubuntu desktop type environment, so Unity in this case.
Yeah, but it's in the format of a complete book.
Yeah, so you can download it as a PDF, am I right?
You can indeed.
Excellent.
I think you might be able to get a printed version as well.
Cool. So obviously they need to update it from the old version, from which has got out-of-date screenshots and wording and things.
Do they just do LTS?
I think they do now. I think there was a plan to do every release, but decided that LTS is a right, little bit more practical.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And Daniel Venema from the Netherlands has emailed us to talk about Evolution.
"I use Evolution to handle my mail and calendar because it was the default option in Ubuntu. As Ubuntu changed its mind from Evolution to Thunderbird a couple of distributions ago, I had to install Evolution from the software center. No problem. But I was wondering what version of Evolution will be available in the Pangolin repository. The version I use right now in Anaric is quite old, and there haven't been any updates for a long time. Perhaps there is another easy way, preferably not having to compile it myself, to get the latest version."
Now, I did a bit of a hunt around to try answer this question. Basically, the way I find, if I want to know which versions of packages Ubuntu is using in a given distribution, if you go to packages.ubuntu.com, then you can just type in the name of the package and say, select a distribution from the drop-down list, and it will tell you what version is in the repositories. It looks like Anaric has 3.2.4 and Precise has 3.2.3, whereas I believe
3.2.0 in Anaric.
Sorry, what did I say?
4.
Sorry, I was getting ahead of myself. My next point was that I believe the current upstream version is 3.4.
Yes, 3.4.1, apparently.
Oh, wow, that's
there
quite
is,
a jump.
There is a GNOME 3 team PPA on Launchpad, but which is supposed to have sort of the latest bits of GNOME 3 which aren't in the official repositories, but from what I could see, Evolution isn't in there or isn't in there yet for Precise. So
Evolution is kind of big with lots of things have dependencies on it.
It's very integrated, or was very integrated
with
as well.
Calendaring and things, yeah, and alarms. So I think that's a tricky one to upgrade.
Particularly as it's no longer the default client, there's not the same impetus to work on it, I guess.
Well, upgrading it would break a lot of other stuff, so stuff's got to move before it can upgrade.
Because it uses, even if it's not using Evolution as the mail client, it uses the data services in the background for all the GNOME 3 bits of Unity took into.
That seems like a problem that needs solving. It just sounds painful.
Yeah. Yes, but probably not in an LTS release, I guess.
Aye.
Oh, well, and that's the end of your feedback. That's that's all for this episode. Thank you for listening, and thank you to those of you who put up with the live stream dropping out on occasion during the course of this episode. Not
You're
sure.
Breaking the magic, Tony. All the downloaders wouldn't have had to know that.
Yes, maybe, hopefully. but yes, a few technical problems. We're not quite sure what's going on there. We're going to blame Alan Pope because he's not here. You can find out how to get in touch with us on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org, including our voicemail number and Twitter feed and Facebook and IRC channel. You can let us know what you think of the show or give us the thoughts about Ubuntu and the community around it. You can join us on Tuesday, the 8th of May, 2012, for our next live episode. So, thank you to Alan Bell for being our stunt Alan. How have you enjoyed it?
Oh, I've enjoyed it very much. Thank you very much for inviting me.
That's a pleasure. It's an evening away from the chickens, I suppose. Did actually bring some eggs for Mark, which is quite impressive.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm going to incubate them, and next time you come round, I might have my own chicken baby.
I don't have a rooster. I'll have to explain how this works, but incubating them's not a good idea.
Well, while we're explaining the birds and the bees to Mark, we'll leave you to get on. Cheerio.
Bye.